Hello, welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast. This is Paul Solentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. I am here with the voices of the Shockers, Denon Gehrig and Shane Dennis. We are coming to you from Lawrence Dumont Stadium, overlooking, what is this, Cali County Junior College practice?
That's correct.
Am I right to say, am I in the ballpark, this may be the first and last podcast recorded at Lawrence Dumont Stadium?
I'd say so.
Haven't been many, yeah. I think you're probably on the right track.
When Bob Lutz writes the history of Lawrence Dumont Stadium, surely this moment will be in the second or third chapter. Paul Solentrop, Shane Dennis, and Denon Gehrig right up there with Satchel Paige and all the greats that have come through this stadium. All right, we're here to talk about Wichita State baseball. Have a big weekend series against South Florida. Let's kind of get people oriented. Shockers are 31-16. Which is good. They're 6-12 in the American in eighth place, which is not good, and that's kind of the hole they've got to dig out of. They're number 27 in the RPI. I guess that's mainly because they have very few bad losses and they have some really nice wins. There are five American teams in the top 27, and the American is number four in the RPI. So let's get to this weekend with South Florida. I think the headliner for South Florida is their lefty starter, the Friday night guy, Shane McClanahan. What can people expect on Friday?
You can expect a left-hander who's going to be up around 100 miles an hour with his fastball, which is not something you see in college baseball very often. You can expect to see a guy who's going to be a top 10 overall pick for sure, probably top 5. And maybe even top 2 or 3 if it's the right team. He has been electric this entire season. He's got stuff that you just don't see very often. And he also has kind of that Friday night starter mentality too. It's not just a guy you can kind of rattle a little bit. He comes after you and really dictates kind of the way in which a game's going to be played.
And I think you can also see a bunch of scouts falling all over themselves when he faces Alec Bohm, because those guys could go within a couple of picks of one another in the June draft. I suppose the good news here is, if there is any to determine once you're facing a left-hander that throws 100, is that he has no complete games this year and averages a little shy of 6 innings per start. So Billy Moll is their head coach. He's a former pitching coach at Illinois State. He was with Mark Kingston back in the day. So maybe some old-timers will remember that name, Billy Moll. But because he's a pitching guy, as the head coach at USF, you can bet that he's taking good care of Shane McClanahan, because he's going to make a lot of money here in about a month. So I guess silver lining in facing a first-rounder, if whoever Wichita State starts throws up a good enough performance and the Shockers scratch and claw well enough to stay close to them in the late innings, you have a chance to win a game started by Shane McClanahan, because he is only 5-5.
And his strikeout rate is so high that contributes to an elevated pitch count, which gets him out of there a lot sooner than a typical Friday night guy. It kind of reminds me of a game a couple years ago when Wichita State faced Chris Sale at Florida Gulf Coast, where I'm pretty sure he struck out 13 or 14, but he only lasted like 5 innings just because the pitch count got elevated. So you can get him out of there pretty early, and like you said, Shane, South Florida's been kind of looking out for his arm a little bit, but this will be easily the most scouts, I think, that's been at a Wichita State game, kind of like the Kyle Freeland and Casey Gillespie matchup up in Evansville a couple years ago, where there was about 50 scouts crammed into that ballpark, which was interesting.
McClanahan, will he be the best pitcher the Shockers have faced to this point in the season?
Gotta be.
Yes.
Yeah. There's Trey Cumbie from Houston is the quote-unquote really good college pitcher, and he knows what he's doing, you know, moving it around, and he's had 2 really good years. Mason Fioli's a pretty good pitcher from Connecticut. We missed out on Tim Cate, also from UConn, but hands down, Shane McClanahan will be it.
He struck out 13 in his last start, 7 innings last week against Memphis, but he's kind of struggled in American games. He's 2-4. He's got a 5.51 ERA in his 6 conference games. Looks to be a little bit wilder, maybe some problems with bases on balls. Is this a situation where the Shockers need to be patient, let him do those kind of things, or no?
That's a really fine line, being patient with a guy that, you know, will strangle you once he gets ahead of you 0-2. But I suppose what Wichita State does have, and that is a all things being equal, they're better against left-handers, statistically speaking. Luke Ritter Dayton Dugas, Jordan Boyer. Those guys are pronounced better splits against lefties. This isn't your run-of-the-mill lefty, no question about it. But that's a good question because you're just as likely to get a walk off of him as you are to get a hit. They're about the same exact numbers. So if, you know, and shocker hitter's going to have to be on high alert. Look, what kind of stuff has the guy got today? Is he missing a little bit? If he is, maybe that's the time to be patient. But if he's around the strike zone, I don't think you can afford to let him get ahead of you.
So definitely McClanahan versus Bohm will be a marquee matchup. This sounds like the kind of thing where we're going to have the big-time guys coming in, the cross-checkers, the higher-ups than just your regional scouts. Would that be correct?
The only reason the regional scouts will be here is to go get the big guys from the airport and make sure that they're at the ballpark. That's what they're for.
That is an important job. Take them to the Doodot Diner or the best places. Yes. after the game. That's a big job. Bulls are also a good offensive team, leading the American with a .292 batting average. Hit a lot of doubles, hit a lot of home runs. How's that match up with Shocker pitching? We're going to talk about that, which has kind of been in tried a lot of different guys.
Well, for one thing, the Bulls don't strike out a whole lot, which is pretty important when you look at what this Wichita State staff has done all season long. Strikeouts have been a huge part of this staff's ability to have some success, and I think late in ball games, the matchups will get really interesting as far as Wichita State and how they're going to play some of those late-inning roles. Keelan Kilgore and Cody Tyler have both started to come into their own as lefty options, and then, of course, you've had Chandler Sanborn at the back end. But I think there will be some pretty interesting late-inning matchups where it'll be kind of power on power. The South Florida team has a lot of extra base pop, but they don't strike out a whole lot, and so those will be kind of the matchups to watch, I think.
Well, that's an interesting dynamic with what Denning just said. And McClanahan gets all the headlines, and actually their pitching staff overall is really good. But, you know, their offense obviously doesn't give you any breathers. And in, I don't want to say disarray in describing Wichita State's pitching rotation, but it's certainly been in flux, at the very least, all year long due to either ineffectiveness, injury, or combination thereof. You know, it'll be paramount for Wichita State all weekend, McClanahan or no McClanahan, for Wichita State starters to at least match whatever USF does on the hill. And they'll have their work cut out for them because it's not like the Bulls are just all pitching and no hitting. They've got a lot of everything.
Freshman Tyler Davis is a Wichita State pitcher who's kind of emerged over the last two or three weeks. What's been behind his success?
Strike throwing. Anybody on that staff that is stuck out in a good way is somebody that's been able to establish the strike zone and stay in it. Everybody's kind of taken their turns. You know, everybody's had their moments. Cody Hoyer got off to a good start. Liam Eddy won his first four starts. The common denominator with all those guys is they've commanded the strike zone and got a hit. When all those guys or each of those guys have had their troubles, it's been falling behind in the count. You're talking about some pretty dynamic arms for the most part all the way up and down that roster, but the ones that have the best numbers are the ones that get ahead and stay ahead in the count. And I think back to what 3 weeks ago maybe in a start against Kansas, Tyler Davis was kind of thrust in there, and it's like, well, let's see what we got with this guy, and came out and threw strikes, and lo and behold, he's turned into the Saturday starter. There's no coincidence in that. And you work ahead and stay ahead, and Todd Butler and Mike Steele will trust you regardless of who we're playing.
It's been kind of interesting to watch the trajectory of certain guys on this staff. And like Shane mentioned, you've had Cody Hoyer and Liam Eddy Friday, Saturday, virtually the entire season. Those two have hit a rough patch. And then guys like Tyler Davis and Preston Snavely, who have put together a couple decent outings in a row. And so you have Hoyer and Eddy making their way out of the rotation, or at the very least towards the back end of it. And those two younger guys making their way towards the front. But with how short the college season is, relatively speaking, you don't have a whole lot of time to just kind of let guys figure it out. So if you've got a hot hand like Tyler Davis has been, just putting together 5 and 6 inning starts, allowing just one run or less, you kind of feel like you have to ride him while he's hot.
Okay, we've got the 3-game series this weekend with South Florida. Next week, a midweek game, Kansas State comes to town. Brad Hill's last appearance in Wichita as the Kansas State coach. And then the Shockers go on the road to Memphis. So that wraps up the regular season. Let's put this in the big picture, which is quite interesting. this is a team with a 27 RPI. They're clearly somewhere in the at-large conversation. Where do we think we are? They are, and where? What do they need to do over this last week and a half?
Well, people that get paid a lot more than me for this type of thing all seem to be in agreement that if the postseason started today, Wichita State would be on the wrong side of it, wrong side of the bubble. The 27, unfortunately, is counteracted with 6-12. And that is a conference record that's hard to ignore. 8 out of 9, regardless of the strength of the conference, so far, according to the experts, would not be good enough. There are 6 remaining in the league, 7 games overall. You would think if you go 5-2 in those, depending on who the 2 losses are against, that would bolster Wichita State and keep them out of 9th place, which would keep them in the conference tournament. And then you take your chances once you get down to Clearwater, because everybody that's in that tournament has a good RPI, if you want to look at that. So,
yeah, that's important to mention. Only 8 of the 9 schools make the conference tournament. So Wichita State, in addition to wanting to win for all the regular reasons, you need to win your way into the conference tournament. I think there are 6 of the 9 schools have locked up their spots, and then we've got Tulane, Wichita State, and Memphis that are still kind of in play. Denning, where are you at with Wichita State and its resume?
I think I'll be a little more pessimistic as far as the finish goes and say that it would take 6-1 to get Wichita State back onto the right side of the bubble. I just don't think taking 1 of 3 against South Florida and sweeping Memphis and beating a bad K-State team is enough to get it done. If anything, Wichita State has proven pretty consistently that they beat the teams that they should beat, especially in the midweek. But it's on the weekends and they've had their backs against the wall for a couple different weekends now, where it's kind of a do-or-die situation. Need to take 2 of 3, and they haven't been able to get it done against UConn or Cincinnati. So, to me, 2 of 3, an absolute must against South Florida. Sweep would go a long way. Then you could have a little bit more leeway, potentially drop 1 to Memphis, but I just feel like there's a lot of work left to do and not a whole lot of time to do it.
Yeah, if on Sunday night they're sitting with 2 wins over South Florida or 3, then I think you take a fresh look at this, definitely. I'm not going to pretend that I did any deep research, but there are schools that in the recent past have made the NCAA tournament with conference records below 500. Wichita State has some work to do to even get close to 500. We can look at last year. Texas was 11-12 in the Big 12, 16 RPI. They made it. South Carolina was 31 in the RPI, 13-17 in the SEC. They did not. In 2016, we had a 13-5 Boston College team and a 13-17 Wake Forest team in the ACC. They both made it. And you go back to 2015, Bradley, 10-11 in the Missouri Valley Conference with a 23 RPI, and they made it. So it's an odd situation. I think it's taken us 7 months as members of the American Athletic Conference, and Wichita State can say all those things we used to say about mediocre teams in power conferences getting in, unfair. Now Wichita State says, well, that's, you know, it's a tough conference, and it's the entire body of work. It's really an interesting situation.
Well, there's probably 15 or 20 little stuffed mascot dolls that Wichita State probably needs to purchase and buy some needles. And if you're into voodoo, root for and against some other teams around them if things don't fall just their way, because some of the teams that you mentioned in the past over the years that got in when just kind of on the surface you think they might not or shouldn't. Each year is unique, and you just never know what. And we see it all the time. We've seen the Shockers for 40 games. You know, some other team, people on the committee from afar, just get a snapshot of Wichita State. So not time to panic just yet, but it's certainly not time to party just yet either, as far as postseason is concerned.
Yeah, and certainly the field will, you know, rise and fall based on what other schools do, things Wichita State has no control over. There's the famous example of Missouri State in 2003, right when they went to the College World Series. Those guys had packed up. I think they had to call them back. They were on to their back home for summer or on to their college or summer ball destinations, and they called them back, and then they went on a run. So that will be interesting. Certainly, I think the Shockers, you know, they just need to win every game they can, and certainly helping themselves with a series win against South Florida would be a good way to start. Let's talk about some individuals. Luke Ritter has kind of turned into an interesting story here. He's hitting .322. He's got 6 home runs. He leads the Shockers with 11 doubles. Last year, he hit .223. And as recently as March 18, he was under .200. Now he's turned into a real offensive leader, versatile defensive guy. He can play in the outfield. He can play in the infield. Denning, tell us about Luke Ritter's season.
Well, as recently as late March, it looked like he was kind of continuing all of last season into this one. The batting average was really low, but I think to Todd Butler's credit, he kept the faith and kept Luke Ritter at the top of the lineup, whether it was in the one or the two spot. Just felt like his approach at the plate profiled really well up there. They felt like he was squaring balls up and getting some really tough hitting luck. The BABIP was not rewarding him. And so they just kind of stuck with it, basically. I know that Sammy Esposito talked a little bit about some tweaks in his approach at the plate, but for the most part, he has just been the same guy, and the balls have started falling in. He's been a monster at the top of the order and a very important role to play because you want to have as many guys on base for your Alec Bohms and your Grayson Genesis as possible, and he's been getting on, it seems like, twice a night, virtually every night over the last month plus of the season.
Had the 19-game hitting streak, and that ended, and then he's got hits in both the midweek games. Denny, you're going to have to explain BABIP for all the people who are not the big stat guys.
Batting average on balls in play. So it takes away the strikeouts from your batting average, and so a person who is being quote-unquote lucky with their hitting will have a very inflated BABIP, or it also means that when they don't strike out, they hit the ball pretty hard. And so at the beginning of the season, Luke Ritter had a very low BABIP, which means that he was getting quote-unquote unlucky with where his hits were falling, and they've started to fall in and kind of even out a little bit over the last month plus.
And frankly, he struck out too much last year. Part of the reason why he couldn't sustain a good batting average, and he's done a lot better job of putting balls in play. And when you hit as hard as Denning is alluding to him hitting him, then they're going to find holes. And that's what happened with him this year. And all credit to him, even when he was, 80 or something on March 2nd and still under his weight, middle of March, like Denning said, his approach didn't change. And really, the balls coming off his bat didn't change. They just started finding holes. So it's easy to panic when you're a young guy and your batting average looks like you're playing bingo. I mean, that's depressing. Look up there at that huge scoreboard and you're 0-71, but... and he's also saved in his best for last because he's been really good in conference play. I think he's above .350 in the American. So he should definitely get some all-league mention regardless of where he plays. I don't know if they have a utility position, but if they have one, he'll have a legit shot to get it.
He's hitting the ball hard everywhere, too. It's not just pull side or middle. He's shooting the ball towards right center field. I think he is homered to all three parts of the ballpark at X Stadium this year, and that's kind of an interesting adjustment that he has made from last year, just letting the ball travel, shooting it towards the right center gap, and I think it's difficult for defenses to shift him. We've seen more and more teams are aggressive in which they deploy a defensive shift, but it's kind of hard to do that against Luke Ritter. He works to the middle of the field a lot, and has just kind of, I think, matured as a hitter with the way that he goes about his at-bats.
Another guy who's going to rack up a lot of postseason accolades is third baseman Alec Bohm. He's on the Golden Spikes Award watch list, one of 40 players on that. Semifinalists are announced May 21st. His development at Wichita State, give us some descriptions, some snapshots of Alec Bohm and how he's progressed.
Well, he's obviously profiles big time at the next level, as big as he is, as strong as he is. He's another guy that can hit the ball out to all fields and has. Half of his home runs, I think, or until this week, were in the conference. So he'd been doing it not only in the non-conference, but in the American. But he's just so hard to fool. He's just, to me, he has the things that you can't teach. You tell people not to get off balance. You tell people to look at it for a certain pitch and then adjust to the next one. Well, not everybody can make those adjustments like he can. And all the while not swinging at bad pitches, not striking out, and getting his, as they say, against everybody. I mean, there's a vast majority of the hitters that are going to feast on guys that can't pitch. But when you face top flight pitching, you find your level. Well, Alec Bohm is going to get his hits against everybody, and that's the mark of a truly gifted hitter. And I'm not saying he hasn't worked at it, because he certainly has, but he's got stuff that you can't teach up there, and you can tell just by looking at him in one particular at bat.
For a big guy, he has remarkably quick hands, and I think that's one of his best attributes up there, is because he can get into two strike counts and still take hacks that I would qualify as aggressive rather than kind of defensive. He'll shorten up every once in a while and have a plan of trying to wait back and slap something to right field, but it's not a B swing. It's not just trying to protect with two strikes. He is still up there to do damage. And there was, I think, a worry at one point that he was just going to be a big guy who hit a bunch of home runs and hit 280, but that's not who he is. He has the ability to hit the ball to all fields, and then his natural strength just kind of makes that batting ability play up. Shane and I have talked about how scouts quantify hitting into two different parts of a five-tool player's hitting for power, and his strength just kind of makes his hit tool play up naturally.
What's the buzz on where he will go in the draft in June?
Before McClanahan, everywhere I'm seeing, and that's saying something. That tells you how gifted a hitter he is, that the Phillies at 3 or the White Sox at 4 would be willing to take him over a left-hander that throws 100 miles an hour. I mean, those things are unicorns. You don't have left-handed guys throwing 100 like McClanahan. But, I mean, I've seen with my own eyes 4 different Phillies guys, and not the local scouts either, not the area scouts. We're talking about Charlie Manuel and Larry Boa, special assistants to these guys. I've seen them 2 different times. I've seen Alavila at a home game the other day. They happen to pick 1, by the way. The Tigers do. And, you know, so that tells you everything you need to know. There's some major heat coming in to see Alec Bohm every single game that he plays. And so I would think if he lasts to number 6, it would be a surprise. That is my prediction.
Everything I've seen is top 10 pretty much for sure. And falling beyond, I think 8 is the lowest I've seen him. So don't expect Alec Bohm to be around very long, and pretty cool just to have 2 top 10 prospects coming to Wichita on Friday night. It's going to be an interesting game.
That will be fun to watch. We had Alec Bohm on the Golden Spikes list, and that combined with the fact it was Darren Dreyfuss's birthday last week kind of set off a round of Darren Dreyfuss nostalgia last week in the press box. Shane played with Darren Dreyfuss, who, of course, was a pitcher, designated hitter, basically carried Wichita State 1993 College World Series championship game. Shane, I think we just ask you, what was it like, or what were your memories of playing with Dreyfuss? What games stood out? Give us some memories of what it was like playing with him.
It was like you have read about, if you weren't around then. You know, legend kind of precedes him, but it was real. I mean, he had light tower power, and through 97, 98, with a lower three-quarter arm angle, and nothing was ever straight. I mean, he was a guy as a pitcher that could come in the third inning and finish, or as a DH, totally wreck the other team by himself, you know, just because of his ability to get hot and, like you said, carry a team. And that is not hyperbole. He did carry us in 1993, along with a guy named Toby Smith, a team that really didn't have much business going to the College World Series, and we almost won the whole thing, largely due to Darren Dreyfuss and what he did in the postseason. We played Arizona State in the first round of the College World Series. Mike Branley started that game, if memory serves, pitched pretty well, got us to a lead. And as long as Dreyfuss was rested at the first sign of trouble, go get the starting pitcher and bring in Dreyfuss, because he was going to end it, no matter when it was, you know, 4th inning, 5th inning, 6th, whatever. And so he came in, and I think we had a 2-run lead. We were ahead, at least. I know that. And a kid named Sean Tyler pinch hit for Arizona State. A little left-handed hitter who had no home runs on the season. And it was the 9th inning. We were all sitting in the bullpen down at Rosenblatt. We bagged up all the stuff and put our gloves away and heading back down to the bullpen, because there's no way this little guy is going to touch Dreyfuss. And he hit one about 415 feet, tied the game, and was doing cartwheels all the way around the bases, which I would have been too if I took Dreyfuss deep. And a couple of innings later, Dreyfuss, who happened to be the DH, was still hitting for himself and still in the game, hit one to the zoo or to the highway or whatever, you know, crazy metric you want to use, won the game for us. Didn't win it all by himself, but he did that kind of stuff all the time.
Did you get yelled at for the jinx, for bagging up everything in the bullpen?
No, it was Dreyfuss. No. It's different.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, why was he able, you know, most guys with his talent, with his on the mound, would have been starters. Why was he able to do that relief role so effectively?
If you could get, and Brent Chemnitz surmised this, I think, at a fairly early time in Dreyfuss' regime, if you could use him a couple of times a little more briefly instead of just once as a starter, he's more valuable that way. And his role kind of evolved after that, and it was just kind of a hybrid thing. But it didn't start out that way because we wanted to use him as a closer because of his sheer dominant stuff and have Jamie Bluma set up for him, because Bluma was a fastball slider guy who was really good but just didn't have the stuff that Dreyfuss did. You saw Dreyfuss pitch and you're like, okay, you know, with Jim Newlin having been there 4 or 5 years earlier, it's like, there's our next closer, Darren Dreyfuss. Well, as he showed that he was able to go a few more innings, to use him 3 innings twice in 1 week as opposed to 7 innings once, Brent Chemnitz decided that's the way we're going to go, and then the Dreyfuss role was born after that.
The Dreyfuss role. All right. Excellent. We will wrap it up. Thank you very much for your time. Again, we've got what should be a fascinating game on Friday when South Florida comes to town, comes to X Stadium. And they finish up the weekend series with South Florida, Kansas State at home at X Stadium next week. Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, and we will see you out at the ballpark.